everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Be the Vessel podcast. My name is Daniel, and I am an intuitive psychologist acting as a bridge between Western psychology and the spiritual realm. I interview those called to the healing arts with various ways of knowing, serving, and channeling the most powerful medicine for our collective return to wholeness. If you like what you hear and would like to support the podcast, which is an offering of love, please check out my Patreon page where you can offer support or become a member of the Be the Vessel community with exclusive monthly offerings. Jamie Blaustein is co-founder and CEO of the Sylvia Braffman Mental Health Center in South Florida. He opened this mental health center in late 2021 after a career as an investment banker at Credit Suisse. His inspiration to make this leap was his own personal journey with mental wellness, as well as a number of personal and professional goals he wanted to achieve. Jamie received his undergraduate degree from the University of Michigan and his MBA from Duke University. Jamie currently lives in Miami and is passionate about marrying his business expertise with his passion for helping others make a comeback from the depths of mental illness and addiction. Jamie is also one of my oldest friends. We met somewhere around first or second grade and had a beautiful and messy, emphasis on the messy, journey to where each of us are today. From the depths of darkness to the shining light within, Jamie and I each navigated paths of spiritual growth and passionate pursuit, or more accurately, remembrance of our wholeness. I am deeply grateful and honored to have this conversation now, in divine timing, with a dear friend to celebrate our current trajectories while continuing to explore the spiritual path and how it unfolds for each of us. Please enjoy this episode with Jamie Blaustein, and may it be a light on your own path to remembrance and change. Hey, Jamie. Thanks so much for being here and welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Dan. If you told me 15, 20 years ago I would be doing a podcast, I probably wouldn't even know what a podcast is. I don't think anybody really did podcasts then, but nonetheless, yeah.
I'd probably say the same thing. I really didn't listen to podcasts until like COVID. You know, everyone used to talk about it. There was like that serial show. There was like those crime shows, and I never really got into it until a couple years ago. And
it's a good medium. I drive a lot. I live about 45 minutes from the office, so I love podcasts. It sort of allows you to stay focused on the content, as opposed to some distractions, you know.
I found that this long form kind of, not, I, to be honest, I still don't even listen to that many podcasts, but I found for me the long form style and medium, it allows me to just kind of, turns out I had a lot to say and I kind of wanted a place to do that. And then of course it's become an opportunity to interview people like yourself. So what I'll say about that is that you are without a doubt the person I've known the longest to have on this podcast, and really, you know, one of the people on the planet that I've known the longest, one of my oldest friends. And so, you know, that certainly will be an aspect of this conversation. And I think what I'll start out by saying about that is that I'm just so grateful that we're able to, both of us, to be here and to be able to be having this conversation, to be where we are now, because there is a rich and complicated history to our relationship, to our upbringing, to our own individual journeys. It's incredible. Some would say miraculous, but most importantly, just really beautiful. And so I guess to start out with a question about that is, if you were to reflect, which I'm sure you do from time to time, for a moment, just how you feel right now about your life path, how things are going, how the journey looks and feels for you now compared to potentially any other time in your life.
So the simplest way I can answer that is I feel great about how everything has transpired up until today. I feel grateful. Somebody that I really look up to, like spiritually and in a couple other ways, always says, you know, I live forward and I understand backwards. And what does that mean? It means like staying out of a place of judgment as things happen, that, you know, hopefully I like everything that happens as it happens, but I'm not going to. And if I put a label on it as like bad, that this is a bad thing that's happening, it's pretty short-sighted, because just because it feels bad or it seems bad doesn't mean it is. And I often find that out later on, you know, by the understanding backwards part of the equation. And so I feel it's all perfect. Everything that has transpired that has brought us to this podcast today, I understand why in retrospect. And I feel blessed because I've been through some things that people don't typically make it through. And the volatility of the low to the high, objectively speaking, has been pretty unreal. I say that with no ego. Like, I've not really seen...
No, that is objectively, you know, true.
Yeah. And I have some part in that, but a very little part in it. Honestly, I know that's counterintuitive, but I sort of view it as like this all happened to me. So, what would you say too if I were to throw that back at you?
Yeah, feel free to ask me whatever. And so let me first say to you that, like, that, and because this word spirituality is something, you know, I really feel guided to get into a little bit today with you. And like, that's one of the components of my brand of spirituality that has been maybe a fundamental shift in my holding that perspective. That I guess the way I would frame it, or the language I use, is everything can be a medicine, sometimes a really sour and shitty tasting medicine. And when we're going through it, yeah, who the hell knows? When you're a young kid, when you're a teenager, you know, I was, you know, part of my journey was being sick for a long time. Like, to see that as a medicine, I mean, you know, it's just challenging. You know, it's hard to believe something when you don't, and when the circumstances are not reflecting that back to you, or reflecting back something really rough, it's hard. But yeah, if you show up and you stay true, and if you're able to start to trust in something, if there is some glimmer, and it's not to say, you know, we all need to have complete faith without like anything changing in our circumstances. Ideally, the circumstances start to change so that that trust can be validated. And that's what has started to happen to me, and what it appears has started to happen to you. And so, yeah, it's a beautiful answer. And so for me, I would say that I am the healthiest and happiest that I've ever been in my life. And that's, it's one thing just to say that, but, you know, to sort of be a bit more nuanced about that answer, like, what I started to realize, which I didn't really know at the time, is aside from all the substance use, the legal issues, I'm speaking of myself now, legal issues, the pain, you know, just the emotional, like, trauma, like, I learned after 30 plus years that I'd been living in fear my entire life. Like, my entire life, pretty much all the decisions I made were based in fear, were based in this sense of like needing to be good enough, smart enough, worthy enough. What did my teachers think of me? What did my friends think of me? What did girls think of me? What did my parents think of me? And it just wasn't really getting me that far. I'd achieved some things, you know, you know, at that point, as I was recognizing it, I was in grad school. So like, I'd made it to a certain place, but inside it was just as painful as it was when I was a little boy, which was like pretty rough sometimes. So that recognition that a lot of my journey has been about fear and learning how to shift out of that is a fundamental transition. And I wouldn't say that I'm like, you know, completely healed, or, you know, fear shows up in all sorts of ways, but it's very different. Like, the quality of it, the intensity of it, the way that it activates certain thinking patterns, and the way that it like physiologically activates my nervous system is different, because I learned a lot about how to work with the body. You know, we hear a lot about trauma, and it's pretty popularized now to speak to refer to the body, to refer to emotion, energy stored in the body, all that kind of stuff. And it's important because the body is an important part of it. And my body was just like a mess. I started to explore different modalities as I was healing and coming out of pain. And even after like 10 years of like doing, work on myself, there's this one modality called network spinal analysis developed by this guy, Donnie Epstein, which I'm a huge fan of. It's not mechanical. It's more energetic based, but they have a machine that shows you your nervous system. And mine was like black and red. And, you know, in case people aren't getting the message, that's not, you don't want that. it was just like, in some ways it was validating. It was like, oh yeah, that's kind of what I've been walking. That's like the suit I've been walking around in. And so for me, that understanding, like you said, understanding the past, but not staying stuck in it, because healing, what I think you're referring to is all healing happens in the present and life happens in the present. There's really nothing outside of it except in our minds. So I am really, there's tons of uncertainty in my life right now. It's quite groundless, but I've chosen it that way rather than been subject to it by sort of the systems and the waves we're all a part of. I've let a lot go. I left my clinic. I started doing my own thing, started this podcast, all sorts of things. So the uncertainty is intentional. It's kind of in service of like what I would call expansion or getting free. So there's a lot of excitement. There's a lot of unknown, but I'm like healthy in the sense like my body feels super good and it really didn't for a long time. And I do have a baseline of like feeling a lot of excitement and joy, which I didn't have.
Yeah. So. I like the idea of, uncertainty. It can go one of two directions. It's fear, or it's excitement, really, because it could be, I always say this to folks that I work with, like, it could be, I don't know what's going to happen. Or it could be, I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So if there's this like gloomy, sort of outlook, then the fact that you don't know, like you said, sets off a chain reaction of, oh my God, what's it going to look like? What can I be doing now? Or it's like, oh my God, I don't know what's going to happen. That's exciting. I'm excited to see how things unfold. And it's literally the same words, but totally different energy behind it.
And some neuroscientists would say that the brain can't actually tell the difference between excitement and fear. It's really about how we interpret that physiological, because the physiological response can feel similar. It can feel like butterflies. It can feel, but the way the beliefs we hold about it, like you're saying, the way we frame it makes all the difference because, yeah, like things going well, things not going well, it's never going to be about control. I mean, we can think that we're in control and then we'll be humbled very quickly because we just don't control this universe. We're a part of it. We're an extension of it. We're a branch of it. There's just a lot our minds don't know and don't understand. So we can choose to be excited about the unfolding. And that's, I'd say, where a part of the trust and faith that in some sort of spiritual way, the universe has our back, that it is here to support us. It's not here to tear us down and to just, you know, if we don't have that, then it's understandable that we're walking around as these sort of trauma machines, like hyper vigilant about this really scary and threatening place. Like then it's understandable that you don't know what's going to happen and you think it's going to be, you know, the baseline is that it's going to be bad. But if we start to, you know, hold a perspective of like, maybe it's good. Maybe it's all good, even when it feels bad, then the uncertainty can transmute into it. Because if someone was just able to, you know, I talk to and I work with people who call themselves psychics and clairvoyants and I work a little bit in that realm. But like if someone were to come to you and say they could tell you your whole life, they can map it out the time that you're gonna die, how it's gonna happen, like would we really want that? Would we really want that? Because
that sounds
like
depressing,
it's really,
yeah. I mean,
it's a little bit of fun out of it.
What are we living for? Right? We know it all. It's like kind of disappointing. I can see why there's comfort. If you could selectively, you know, it would be a nice defense mechanism. If you could selectively say what's going to happen with this. Right. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that sort of like takes out the whole spirit of life.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's an interesting proposition or an interesting sort of like consideration to think about.
And so the way, the perspective that I hold is that it really does unfold in the present. And even not to get too like nerdy about it, but in quantum physics, there's this whole understanding about sort of the observer effect, that when we are not observing the, you know, the subatomic particles, whatever they're called, protons or whatever, it's actually just potential. Our minds can't even really wrap our heads around it. Like it's a potentially a wave, or it's potentially whatever the other thing is. And then when it's measured, it becomes something. We still can't really understand what that is. But the way that I translate it is like, there, even though I hold the belief, and I've experienced, you know, working with people who have other ways of knowing, that like, you know, we can come to understand things, and there's astrology and there's other things, if people are open to it, about, you know, sort of the energy of, or the percentage chance of where we're going. There is free will. There is this potency in the present that we get to create our life. And that speaks to not being beholden to and victim by our trauma, you know, which is, I sense what you're also referring to, which is like, if we get stuck in the past, and, you know, it's helpful to explore it, but you know, it's a bit why I stepped away from more traditional forms of therapy, at least the kind I was trained in, because if you're in psychoanalysis for 10 years, you know, that you're in that energy, and then you start to carry, and maybe you get a label that initially feels good. You know, maybe you get a diagnosis that initially feels good, but then you're trying to step into the present and create your life. And you're like, oh, but I'm traumatized. Oh, but I'm depressed. Oh, but I'm this. And it's like, well, what happened to all the power, the potency, and the potentiality of the present? And that's why I feel on many levels, it's important to see the possibility of the present, that we don't know everything that's going to happen. And that's actually a good thing.
Sort of a catch-22. Yeah. I mean, we could go on all day about, you know, the value of a diagnosis or a label, and, you know, yeah, for sure. I mean, we could do a whole podcast series.
Yeah. We don't necessarily need to go down that path, but so what I'll shift us into is a little bit about this new exciting venture you have going on, and which is part of the reason I think why we sort of in divine timing connected at the Sylvia Braffman Mental Health Center, if I'm pronouncing that right. And specifically, what I'd be curious to start us off with is if you could go back to that time in your life where the pivot took place, because I think that's such a, I mean, I think a lot of things have encouraged people to pivot, encouraged me to pivot, particularly over COVID, to really just recognize like the paths we were leading, even if they seemed good and were achieving many things on the surface, but weren't necessarily filling us up, you know, lighting us up, aligned with our highest life path. So if you could just take me back to that point, I believe you were in finance, correct me if I'm wrong, and that transitional and transformative time of shifting into, you know, sort of the larger area of the healing arts, I would refer to it, and your current service, and just how that looked, and maybe some of the feelings and maybe some of the inner knowing you had about pursuing what you're doing now.
So I think the precursor to that pivot was the big pivot, which was, you know, coming up on 10 years ago, when I got sober and, you know, started a process of spiritual growth that really, you know, that's like the point in time where like there was the before and the after, right? Like everything was pretty much different thereafter, in a really good way. So, you know, one thing led to another. You know, I have this spiritual experience. I get really involved in that, in the spiritual life, helping others. And it, for me, it was never instead of external ambition. It was underlying it, right? It was like in parallel with it. Now, the value of external success became less in the sense of I still like it, but it wasn't like I needed to breathe. And I also saw the correlation between when the best me shows up, the best job shows up, the best girl shows up, right? Like there is a correlation between my internal condition and my external circumstances. So all the while, since that big pivot, you know, 10 years ago, I've just continued to you know, as a mentor of mine says, chop wood and carry water, kind of stay in the trenches, keep doing the deal as it relates to spiritual work, helping others, you know, personal growth, you know, meditation, etc. And all the while, all of these external blessings just continued to fall in my lap. So to speed up a little bit, you know, I eventually have, you know, relationships that are restored, advanced, better jobs, business school, better job after that, nicer apartments, more money, all this good stuff externally. But it's always been really about, okay, the truth is I was a dead man 10 years ago and I got a second chance and I need to always, on the heels of that, you know, stay vigilant with the internal work. So I've done that. And so I got to a point about 2 years ago, which is, I think, the pivot that you're referencing, where I was looking for something a little bit different in my career, but I didn't know what the output was going to be. I knew that the criteria that I was honing in on were both personal and professional. So personally, I'll be honest, I was, you know, I was an investment banker in New York and I was still doing all the same stuff that I just talked about on the side. Now it's tough because, you know, banking can be quite painful and, you know, so many hours. And so it is certainly tough to like manage, you know, the work-life balance. And, you know, somebody also says that I really appreciate is like, don't let the process replace the solution. So while like getting into meditation and getting into, you know, inventory and prayer and all that stuff is great, like process for me, I could still connect to the universe, to God, whatever. I mean, in the middle of, you know, the investment banking, you know, the insanity of that, I was able to do that. But I was always honestly content with the career aspect and like the external life and the internal spiritual life kind of like running in parallel. So it wasn't purely a desire to, I need to reorganize my life so that it's more altruistic. I was content with the amount of altruism and giving back and helping others that I was doing all the while also pursuing external stuff. But I did want an expanded platform in a perfect world to be able to help more people, number one. Number two, a different subset of people. The people that I was helping in my personal life were true addicts, alcoholics, right? They were just like me, physical allergy, can't stop once you start, mental obsession, can't stay stopped, very similar stories. And I recognize that there's a lot of people that don't necessarily have that condition, if you will, in terms of how they react to substances, who still suffer from a lot of the same spiritual malady. Doctor might call it anxiety, depression, this, just the stuff, the baggage. And so I wanted to be able to reach those folks. And I couldn't do that through the conventional path that I had been, which, you know, is more fellowship based, right? We don't talk about it in too much detail, but so that was the personal motivation to be able to help more people. Professionally, I always felt like, I was pretty like, I had a pretty decent balance of like IQ and EQ, and that I wasn't like amazing at anything in particular in business, but like I was pretty good at everything else and navigating. You know, banking taught me like the fundamental building blocks of business, right? Like it was painful, but like I'm super grateful for that time. I learned so much. I was able to like think differently and see things differently and just like be able to zoom out and understand kind of what's going on in business. But what I really wanted was to be more of a holistic business practitioner, AKA like a general manager, number one. Number two, I wanted ownership of something. And so I was considering this other avenue called the search fund, where I was going to raise capital with a buddy from business school and we were going to acquire a company. And around that time, I got a call from this guy, Ben Brafman, who's my co-founder, who ended up, he owned a rehab that I was in when I was 21. He actually kicked me out of rehab.
Full circle.
Yeah, seriously. So he approached me and was like, hey, I want to do something more mental health focused. He was an amazing clinical mind, not really into the business side of things. And so he approached me around that same time during COVID. I was down in Miami for a lot of COVID. You know, everybody was working from wherever. And so I was sort of like, okay, this could be my search fund, right? I have my operator. I have a veteran in the space. We'll raise capital. We'll, you know, so I just felt like it was the right risk profile for me. Like, it was, of course, a big risk and there was some fear around it, but it was also a calculated risk. It wasn't like starting some tech company with like an unproven technology. You don't know if there's going to be a demand for it. And like, maybe you'll be a billionaire in 5 years, but there's a very good chance you'll flop and be, this was like, okay, it's going to work. Maybe I won't be a billionaire, but business-wise, it should work. So I think that that mitigated some of the risk of that move. And it checked all these boxes. So it was really about the criteria that I had personally and professionally. And God just kind of like dropped this into my lap. And I was like, okay, this guy needs what I have. I need what he has. This is going to be a good partnership. And it's proven to be just that.
I love that answer for many reasons. And I'm going to circle back to some of what you started out saying because of how honest and authentic it is. And because I would like to explore a bit more of your brand of spirituality, but what I'll first comment on is I think it's really beautifully said that there are some older traditions of the idea of spirituality, of Buddhist philosophy or whatever people are into that you know, maybe proposes a sort of ascetic kind of style of living and mindset. It's like, get rid of everything, let things go, you know, be a monk. And like, I think I've been a monk in a few lifetimes past and I wasn't interested in being one in this lifetime. So it's to get comfortable with the idea of abundance. Now, I think abundance can mean different things. We have a conditioning around abundance, meaning this paper, money, and now digital, crypto, whatever you're into. But there are other forms of abundance, right? We can be supported. There can be synchronicities in life. There can be opportunities. This person who I'm really interested in and who I'll quote and won't talk too much about him because it's pretty out there. He's a channel and is very deep into this more spiritual world, but the information he channels would refer to abundance as being able to do whatever you want, whenever you want to do it. And that doesn't mean you have to have billions of dollars in the bank. Like it's actually about getting more in touch with what you want, which is harder than we realize. Because if we're conditioned to think that abundance or success only looks like the big paying job, lots of money in the bank, whatever, big house, etc., we get it and then we're unhappy and we didn't realize that like that wasn't really abundance to us. Like we don't really know what we want. We just got the things that we thought we wanted. And for me, I really had this pretty unhealed relationship to money. Like my, you know, family was well off enough and I never had to be a concern for me growing up, but there was always this, you know, you use the word allergy. There was a little bit of this allergy for me. And it's totally a place of privilege and easy for me to say, you know, that since my family had it, it wasn't something that I had a close relationship to. But that's really not always the case because usually in those lineages of having privilege and having money, it just carries forth and people want more of it and you want to, you know, be a success in the eyes of your parents or whatever. I just wasn't that way for me. I was like, I just don't totally get it. Like it doesn't, I'm a very, and always have been a very emotion-based person. So I didn't feel it, like the idea, the pursuit of just money. So I floundered a lot because I didn't know exactly what my skills were, how to make them work for me, to create abundance that worked for me. And that took a while. And then I entered a path, you know, clinical psychology, et cetera. And it was the same thought. I was like, all right, well, I won't be a billionaire, but I think I'm aligned. And then even at the sort of the nth degree, the edge of that pursuit, I was still getting sick. I was still unhappy. And it was like, I needed more abundance, not necessarily financial, although that's part of it, but really it was freedom. Mm. I needed more freedom.
Yeah.
So abundance in the form of freedom. I needed to be able to do what I wanted, to be able to express my truth, to be able to be into weird spiritual stuff and like integrate and not be like boxed in to a degree or a license or like a frame of thinking. And so I just wanted to start by saying I really love the way that you framed your spiritual path in relationship to abundance. And that, yes, it doesn't mean you have to be meditating 24 hours a day, because that doesn't necessarily, I know people that meditate that are still miserable. So it's not, it's a means to an end. It's, and maybe the end is still the journey, but like to recognize, like we're trying to feel better. So it's just doing, making your whole life look like that doesn't mean you're getting your form of abundance or your form.
I totally agree with, for me, I've actually never been one to like get off on money. It's just even like the self-seeking parts of me that are looking for a dopamine hit. It's just never really been like where I've gone. I agree, though. I love it's the freedom to do the way that you defined abundance. I like having freedom to do things that I like to do and want to do, and I like security as everybody does, right? So that's sort of the extent of it for me. You know, I could say that food, obviously drugs and alcohol are things that I've used as a dopamine hit. I've still used sometimes food. I've used a bunch of different, call them third alternatives. But it's never really been money, but I like it. And I think it's okay to like it. And yeah, not have this like this conception of like, this is what the spiritual life looks like. In fact, for me, it's very important that it's practical. Because it can't be theoretical or it's sort of useless, in my opinion. Then I think you're still kind of in the mind. And one thing that I think has helped me and also enabled me to help others is that I'm pretty good at, I could go in the weeds on spirituality and like talk about, you know, the nooks and crannies and the nuances and philosophize and all that. And I like doing that, but I also really like zooming out. And being like, and this is, it's funny because it's sort of like a lawyer business kind of like dialect, but like points 1, 2, 3, like these are the core things here. Like just a couple words, like less is more sometimes, you know what I mean? So it's helped me frame things like in a simplistic way that almost makes it easier for someone like me who I think like you is super analytical and could go on, you know, analyze. Oh, but then I actually need less of that. I need very simple.
100%. And that is like me. And what I found is we need to do what worked for us and we need to find out what works for us. Cause in my training, you know, in that Western form of psychology and mental health, it is so analytical. Even though we talk a lot about emotions, we're talking a lot about emotions. So we're not necessarily feeling, you know, and I know lots of people as clinicians who, you know, aren't necessarily pursuing their personal path of feeling, don't really feel they need to. But from I needed to. That was the main thing. It wasn't just helping people, it was helping myself. And I needed different things. I needed to meet with things that I needed to engage with things that were outside the box that people might look at a little questionably. But then I started to heal. And there's nothing that gives you more conviction than the things that you start to get into. And if you need less language, and I needed less, I was theoried out. I know so much about theory. I was a really good conceptualizer. I got a 4.0 in grad school and I was miserable and still getting sick all the time. So I needed less, and there are different ways that shows up, but we need to do what works for us. And then it turns out that the things that work for us are the things we're passionate about and have to give. You know, I've always thought if I opened a training program, I would just have people go out and try like 25 different modalities of healing. I don't care what it is, just like see if it works. And if it works, if it shifts something inside you, like probably a good chance that you'd like to pursue it, you know? Instead, we give people textbooks and say, well, this is a really well-known theory. Like, what do you think about this? And your mind might say, yeah, no, I like what Freud said. It's like, cool, yeah, but are you feeling better as a result of it? That's sort of my version of practicality. And what I'll just go back and comment on what you mentioned earlier is to give us some credit, the individuals who were more drawn to substances and things like that is I think we were going straight to the source, right? It's like money, great, but it's kind of indirect. Like it's just, but the substance actually just, you know, helping shift your, and I'm joking a little bit, but also not helping you shift your consciousness and your state of being. You know, obviously the pills and other stuff, they have severe consequences, but the invitation to open that door and to shift into a state of being that feels better is like pretty practical and logical. It's just that we needed to find other ways to do it. And so I feel that those of us in that camp tend to recognize on some level, an unconscious level maybe, that there's like a direct route to feeling better. And maybe, you know, some of the ways we've chosen it or been exposed to it are not such good long-term practices. But we can take maybe some of those lessons into the future where it's like, okay, money, cool, yeah, but are there more direct routes to feeling good? And is money just a medium for something else that I'm wanting to be able to do, whether it's, you know, to do what I want to do or just or have the life I want to have?
Yeah, I mean, it's no secret. they call it spirits for a reason, right? That, I know this, you know, you touched on this briefly, but like, back in the day, they literally thought alcohol was spirits, right? So it is a spiritual solution, kind of, or it replaces a spiritual solution, I should say. And I call them third.
It presents as well.
Yeah, I call them third alternatives because in some of the literature that we, you know, people like me look at, it talks about we had but two alternatives. One was to go on to the bitter end, right? Like as we were, and the other to accept spiritual help. But there's really a third alternative too, and that's neither of those things, but using things to feel better. And it's a distraction from feeling the truth, feeling, you know, us at our true essence. And different people use different things, but it's all just like noise, you know?
Yeah. And so that leads me to which can feel like a big question, so answer it in any way that you want, but because you've referenced it a lot, and I know that it is a key component to your life and even to the Braffman Center, as I've seen, one of the five lanes, you know, spirituality, like how does your brand, and you've talked about it a lot already, but how does your brand of spirituality look, and maybe to hone it in a little bit, how do you feel it differs, if at all, from the AA or fellowship model, which I know you've referenced?
Yeah. So what I'll say is AA or, you know, the 12-step fellowship model, it leaves it, you know, it's as broad, roomy, and inclusive, right? So on one hand, they're using the word God. On the other hand, they broaden it by talking about higher power. It can look like whatever you want it to look like, honestly. But there are certain conceptions, I think, that are laced throughout. And so for me, it's been sort of kind of mixing up my black cauldron with ideas from a bunch of different places. 12-step fellowship for me was an avenue to get to that point, right? And then sort of fine-tuning by leveraging other spiritual resources to kind of help me fine tune that connection. So the best way I can answer it, I guess, and you're right, this is a very tough question, especially because I try with spirituality to not be in here in the mind, but in here. So by virtue of talking about it and defining it, I'm sort of counterintuitive because it's actually
one thing I'll say just to interrupt is actually the way, just to that point, like, because I, you know, in some realms of the spiritual community that I engage with, people talk about things like law of attraction and manifestation. And I would just say to that point, the way that I heard you starting to speak about creating your life the way you wanted it to look when you were pivoting out of finance wasn't necessarily knowing every detail about how you wanted it to look, but you had a sense of how you wanted to feel, is what I hear. And that has been a very powerful part of my journey, is like, it's almost a little ridiculous to think that we could know exactly how we want our life to look, but we can get a pretty good sense of how we want it to feel. Like, we typically know what good feelings are like and what bad feelings are like, and we want more of the good ones. So I have found in my own meditation, in my own sort of visioning, in my own work with people, in my own life, like doing, like going into those feelings and letting that be the brand of spirituality, like letting whatever comes from that, whatever philosophy, whatever words comes from the feeling, it is a way of like letting it work for me and then letting the circumstances sort of meet that.
It's a good point. And I think, yeah, look, of course you're going to fall short a little bit if you try to speak about it, because you are, you know, by speaking, there's a concept involved. But with any word that I say podcast, I say computer, right? An image pops into the mind, right? So yeah, it's going to fall short a little bit, but it's okay to do, obviously. You know, you do the best you can. The problem with, I agree with you, it's a feeling, it's an intuitive thing. But the, you know, the challenge with somebody like me is I'm an addict, so I want to feel good all the time. And so part of the self-seeking part of me.
Let me just say, if that's what defines an addict, count me in, baby.
Yeah. Well, it's that. It's a number of things. It's an inability to control or moderate, but I guess that's kind of one of the same. But like early on, I wanted to get high on God, right? Like, you know, I wanted to go to meditation and feel euphoric. I still, you know, my point is that is my natural default position. Work too. Like, I don't want to just like work until 5 and go home and call it a night, right? I want to work until I am unable to stand up straight, right? Because, you know, assuming it's the kind of work that I like to do and feel good about it. If I had to put words to it, for me, it's quiet. Like, what is God, spirituality? It's quiet. These are some synonyms. It's truth. It's love. It's out of the mind into the body, because the mind, we all listen to it all day. It's all BS, and it's this idea that if I quit playing God, meaning I try to get out of the business of A, thinking I know what's best for me and for everybody else, and B, trying to pull levers to make the show come off how I think it needs to come off for me to be okay, that actually that is the path of least resistance, and that things tend to work out best when that happens. There's a karma aspect to it as well. I do believe the good that I put out there, it will come back. I think that goes hand in hand with the not playing God, right? Let me do the things that I believe are the right things to do in life. It doesn't mean this idea of getting out of the outcome business doesn't mean like I'm going to not have ambition. I work just as hard and I try for things and I have goals, but I do my best to take my hand off the outcome, and I trust that it's going to unfold the way that it's supposed to. And that means just being a generally good guy, understanding that I don't know what's best all the time, laying aside prejudice of what it's supposed to look like. And the way, let me actually just say one last thing. You asked me like, what is my spirituality? Let me tell you the, intuitively speaking, the best way that I could say it is there's something going on here.
Yes, there sure is.
Right? It's like, there's something going on about the way the world works. There's just something going on.
Yeah, that's a fundamental distinction between people. Do we think maybe there's something going on here, or is it all up to your mind to play the game of scarcity and competition, and you're separate and you need to compete and it's all survival based and you're just an animal? Like, because if that's the wiring, then yeah, you're going to live a certain way. And that's going to dictate a lot of things.
Yeah. And I also know that like God, you know, universe, spirituality, whatever, helps people that help themselves too, right? So I do need to put in footwork and I need to put in action. I do that. And I do all the things that I said, and the world starts to cooperate with me. And I don't feel like I'm swimming upstream anymore. Sort of like I've got a little bit of a tailwind. And so they do kind of work together in a way. I found just this really good blend of, I still have goals, I want to do things, this and that, but I'm not so reliant on like, I know I'm going to be okay no matter what. I mean, that's the other thing with spirituality. It's like, I'm going to be okay no matter what. I always have been.
Yeah. And I love that. And I subscribe to that brand. And I appreciate you tackling that question because it's a big one. And I'll comment on a couple things that what resonates for me is letting it be easy. Like, obviously life is not always fucking easy, but like seeing if we can practice, let it be easy, because I believe what you're speaking to is that a lot of the ways that life is hard is mind driven, is the sort of the expectations and beliefs we've subscribed to that makes it really hard. And if we question some of those things we're super attached to, like, you know, and to speak to earlier what you were saying about feeling good and how that can drive you into like really pushing yourself. Like, I will say that I totally am of that ilk, and my spirituality is holding an intention to feel good all the time. Now, the way it plays out is also letting go of expectations that that's going to happen and watching myself if I'm reaching for the things that are going to attempt to fill that void that I've learned don't actually support my health or act as a medicine in the sense of, is it going to feel good now and later, or just later or only now? And so that kind of nuance around the idea of feeling good all the time. And yet I still 100% subscribe to feeling good all the time, because what actually, I'd meditated for years, but when I started to feel things like love, which is what I've said in the past, I'd been in romantic relationships, I had a loving family, but I still didn't honestly really know what that feeling could feel like. And just until I was able to start to touch it in myself through meditation, through healing, like these feelings of bliss and, you know, ecstasy and not just the pill. So like I also realized I can't live there. Well, I haven't been able to live there all the time. I can't speak to others. I can't speak to Eckhart Tolle or whatever, but I hadn't been able to figure out how to live there all the time, but it did become a guiding light for me in the sense of like, oh, I can feel a hell of a lot better than I thought. And like that has led me true. It's certainly still for me personally, my body has, you know, always kept the score, to reference the Vanderkolk book, in the sense that like, if I have been pursuing things that I thought were feeling good, my body has been like, yeah, they don't, it's not working, because I would get really sick and it's that whole journey. So that's sort of my like alignment practice, but in a sense, still pursuing feeling good still, because I think for some, it's like, no, life is just, it's not about good feelings. It's about whatever else you think it's about, you know, getting things done, being practical, safety, whatever. And I like stability too, but for me, it became clear that like, there is a way to go toward good feeling and let it work for me in an expansive way, and letting it be easy, because the way I thought I was going to feel good by, you know, sort of killing myself at the clinic and working in, and I'm a little different. Like, I frankly don't like to work that hard. It's just not in my nature. Like, I love to serve and feel impassioned in the way that you said. And that was something, that was the way my body was communicating, was when I was working pretty hard at the clinic and had my degree and everything, I was starting to get sick. I was starting to like almost fall asleep in sessions and stuff. And again, some colleagues, if I spoke to them, they'd be like, yeah, that's kind of the work, you know, you get burned out, you gotta fine tune it. And I was like, that was unacceptable to me. I was like, no, I feel like this has to be better for me, or I don't know that like I want to be here, not even just here, but like here. So like I needed to find another way. And what I found was like, oh, it can be different. Like, I don't necessarily just the sense of expansion and like how things can look differently than I thought. And, you know, that specific example is just like, you know, working differently, having a different perspective, doing my own thing. And like, you know, you can, yeah, there are ways to work. And I actually think there are collective shifts on the planet that we're waking up to, as there are some, there's some instability in institutions, like financial institutions and the way people have traditionally worked jobs and whatever. It's a bigger conversation, but I think giving myself permission to see that there are more possibilities for how I could let it be easy and get more of the feelings that I want.
I think if there's going to be some sort of crash that comes with the feeling good,
yeah,
that's usually a good telltale sign that it's not the kind of good
right.
that is good for me
right.
necessarily.
Yeah, that's a good signal.
The sustainable good. I'll be honest, like I'm still wired like an addict. So I want to feel ecstasy. I don't want to feel good in my natural state, right? Feeling good where it's just like, okay, it's a different good.
Yeah.
And it's different, right? But
good way of framing it.
You know, with any high, there's going to be a low. And I'm, you know, while the addict part of me does want to feel that high, like what I want today is more like quiet and like sustainable good.
And I'll speak for myself and say that I love the word quiet. Because quieting the mind is regardless of what we subscribe to, like quieting the mind, it feels good. Because most thoughts are punishing and painful. What I will say for me is that I totally agree about the crash part, and yet that I have just experienced states of being that have come through meditation and forms of energy work that I'm interested in, you know, working with the chakra system, and particularly a lineage called that network spinal work, and also a lineage called pranic healing. Like when I started to experience it, I felt there was some experiences I had with that network spinal work at first where all my symptoms went away, you know, and so that was a big part of what I was desiring. I was sick for so long, I forgot what it felt like to feel good. All the symptoms went away, and I also was like bursting out laughing on the table, and they were barely even touching me. I felt like I was on psychedelics. And so I knew, and this is where, you know, our brains may be a little different, like I knew I wasn't necessarily going to sustain that, and I wasn't even going to chase it. But the fact that I could experience it without substances was like mind-blowing to me, and it just opened me up to like, there's more to this than I thought. Like there's more to what's possible in our states of being and how we can change it than I thought. So just knowing those states exist and having been able to not necessarily chase it, but having been able to touch it in different ways that didn't involve substances, it clued me into like, wow, there's like a larger game at play. And for me, I have found that I've been able to touch it more and more, not in that same highest of highs, but in like a general good feeling of like peace and love that like is close on the spectrum. And like, it just feels like I use the word like vibrational frequency. Like it feels like I've been able to be at a higher frequency most of the time and without negative emotion energies. And just that possibility, it's so exciting to me that, you know, and I'm not, you know, cause you referenced some of the people before that, you know, don't necessarily have that allergy. And even though I was really deep in the game, I think I didn't really have the allergy in the same way for the addictive potential. So I'm not as fearful of going toward, I'm not even saying you are, but it's, I'm not as cautious about exploring things like that because I do have a trust in myself that like, okay, we're going to come down from someplace, but it's not necessarily going to be a crash because when I touched those states without the substances, like, different things would happen. Sometimes trauma would show up when I would get into those spaces because they were usually, I was experimenting with healing modalities. So maybe there'd be a high, like let's say a plant medicine journey, psilocybin or ayahuasca or something, like there can be a high, but then, you know, you're going to work through some shadows to get to the light, and that's part of it. And so if I can, you know, obviously one is better than the other, but if I can practice being okay with when that stuff shows up too, I still feel free enough to like go toward the good stuff and keep discovering kind of what's possible in that realm.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I'm stone cold sober for coming up on 10 years, which is a ride in and of itself. I mean, you feel everything. You know, being sober is its own drug in a way. And I know you've dabbled sobriety, and I agree, you know, looking back on it, you were probably teetering, but not quite over that line, you know. But
my behavior was like, you know, addict status for sure. The relationship to it I sort of only learned in retrospect was a little different just because I was able to stop. I was just able, you know, and,
yeah.
and
I mean, that's the key differentiator, right? Do you have the power of choice, some control or
moderate? And it was my, again, it was my body, and certain people would have pushed past these signals, but I've always been so sensitive in my body that, you know, sort of the Sundays, right? The days after, whatever, I'd be so depressed. I was sinking into the really deepest and darkest places I'd ever been in. And my body was, but even that hadn't really stopped me. It was my body was so sick that, you know, it, to reference, you know, our current times, it felt like I had COVID every day. So, and I got this label, chronic fatigue syndrome, and all this stuff. So some people would push past it and be like, well, fuck it, I'm still an addict. But for me, it was like, I can barely get out of bed. And so from that very still very strong invitation, I was able to pivot.
Yeah. And part of the addict mentality, right? Like that's, I would call that like maybe a problematic user mentality, right? My mentality as an addict, and most can relate to this, is, oh, well, I got to just stay that way then, right? Yeah. Rather than hit Sunday morning, I got to be like this all the time.
Yeah.
You know? A lot of fear of pain and discomfort. Even to this day, I have a pretty low tolerance for discomfort. I'd like to say that I don't, but, you know, I think also, you know, the more reps you have at, you know, the natural ebbs and flows of life and feeling everything, I think the less, at least for me, the less sensitive I've become. But I just want to say, I want to clarify that, just going back to what we were talking about earlier, I am by no means perfect at this idea of running the external ambition world and the internal spiritual world simultaneously. I mean, I fall short every single day at the not playing God, at the trusting in the universe. I mean, I struggle with that at work a lot because I'm super demanding of people. And if I think that someone's, you know, not doing their best or being dishonest, right? Just setting aside whatever they, you know, wherever their side of the street may not be clean. The part of me that wants to call them out, to go at them, to tell them what they should be doing and to let them know that they're wrong and I'm right, right? Like I could say all I want, yeah, I'm on this spiritual journey and this and that, but like pay attention to how I feel in my actions more than what I'm saying. So there are times where I become agnostic implicitly, each day, and my actions would be best indicator of that. But ultimately, I get back on the beam relatively quickly. And, you know, we're spiritual beings having a human experience at the end of the day.
100%. And the way that I would frame it, because yeah, I'm not sure it's meant to be perfected. I don't know anyone that does. Is that we are very good at forgetting. Our minds, like our physical minds, you know, I'm open to the idea of like sort of a higher mind, a higher form of spiritual guidance in connection with what we really are. But, you know, the physical mind that what I would, you know, define very simply put, because I like simplistic language too, is just the container of the belief system, the beliefs about ourselves, others in the world, and the personality and who we think we are. And that mind, it's very good at forgetting what we can sometimes touch, which feels like an essence of God, a higher power, universal will, whatever it is. And we keep needing to be reminded. Like in some ways that really is the journey hasn't necessarily been for me like, oh, I just know it now. So I know it all the time. It's that I forget very, very often. I got a lot of ADHD diagnoses as a kid. So I forget very quickly. But each time I come back, you know, I practice not punishing myself. I actually practice celebrating like, oh my God, I remembered. I'm like, this is a spiritual game at play. And every time I remember, it's like a bit of relief, a little bit of ecstasy, like on the spectrum, you know, a little bit of like, oh my God, it doesn't have to like be that hard. At least in this moment, I'm not in control. There's like a little bit of that freedom, a little bit of that taste of something greater in that remembrance. And that's kind of, yeah, I'd say in some ways, all I want to do each day is like remember as much as I can. And yeah, and I forget and I get triggered and I get reactive and I whatever. And I become like the lowest vibrational parts of my personality and trauma. But that's kind of the human experience as I have come to know it thus far, but the remembering is, it's exciting to me. I don't see it so much as like a job of like, oh, I got to remember, I got to. It's like, I can't wait to remember that like there's more to this because it feels good when I do. So we've touched upon a good amount. I did have a sense that, and I guided the conversation this way anyway, but I wanted to dig into that world of spirituality, even though it's a big topic and a big question, because right now where I am in my life, you know, I grew up with a father who was very interested in Buddhist philosophy, and that's what initially helped him find sobriety and change a bit of his life. But it wasn't totally working for me. And being, and as a kid, like wanting to align with your parent and like, you know, feel connected in that way. Like I read the books, like I was reading The Four Agreements and The Power of Now when I was in like seventh grade. But it was an intellectual game. In fact, I started to punish myself when I couldn't get there. I couldn't be enlightened because I had a really traumatized nervous system and I just didn't understand that. And there weren't like a whole lot of tools available to me. And now at this current stage in my life, you know, there was a brand of healing that I was a part of in my training. And I was always a little bit in resistance. Like I was like, I push back against my supervisors. I was like, oh, I don't think this is right. I don't think the diagnostic model is working for people. And like, I just like, I needed to branch out. And so as I've been branching out, you know, my journey is about humility too, and not just standing on my pedestal and thinking that I know the way. And the truth is, I just think there are many ways, but it's why I'm so interested in meeting with various people, including someone I've known for so long, like yourself, and exploring like what that word means, because I do feel we're stepping into an age where, an age of sort of our collective society, where we've had permission and the freedom to let go of former systems and frames in the form of like religion, for example. There's been a lot more permission in recent decades to be like, that's clearly not totally it. And we can see by some of the way that people act in service of religious ideology, that that's clearly not exactly the way I want to feel and the way I want to behave. So we've given ourselves permission to let go of some things, but we don't exactly know what to fill in the gaps with, because just material things hasn't totally worked either. So I feel we're entering this realm, this stage where it's like, okay, spirituality, like there's something, kind of like what you said, like there's something going on here, but how is that going to work for each of us? And can it work differently for each of us? Can it be different? This person, the entity I refer to named Bashar will reference permission slips. Different things can be different permission slips, like different modalities. Maybe it's yoga, maybe it's, you know, a clean diet, maybe it's meditation, whatever. They can all be permission slips to sort of expanding the possibilities for how we can feel. And so everyone has different permission slips. I have my own, you have yours, and I've just been increasingly interested in like bridging the gaps of different brands and worlds of spirituality. And hey, because it's just fun for me, but it feels like that's of service to help, you know, connect some of the web of how we've all been navigating this open realm. So this may be a good time as ever to begin to start to wrap things up. There's obviously a lot more we could say, and I know that you know, spirituality is a part of the mental health center, and we haven't even really dug into how it manifests there or the philosophy about it there, but you know, maybe we can save that for another conversation. And what I'll just ask now is if there's anything else you'd like to add, anything else you'd like to share, you know, if you'd like to talk about anything, any of the offerings you have going on, or where people can find you if you'd like them to, anything at all.
Yeah. I think, you know, there's room for a part two here for sure. Could probably do a part 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Oh, are we sure? All
I'll say, well, firstly, yes, SylviaBrathman.com, if anybody wants to find us. related to that, different things work for different people, as you know, and as we've alluded to on this. So for me, it was, and I'm quantifying it because, again, I'm just doing the best I can to express it, right? Maybe 90% of it was spirituality for me. And then maybe 5% clinical work and 5% medication, right? For somebody else, maybe it's 30, 30, 40, or maybe it's some other breakdown. There are certain people who you could throw all of the spirituality at them you want. If their chemical balance is not right, it's only going to move the needle so much. The general philosophy here is let's throw the kitchen sink in terms of what we're offering, clinical, medical, psychiatric, spiritual. And if we're going to fail in any one of those areas, let's fail quickly and let's hone in on the stuff that's really working. Because again, different things work for different people. And so I feel really blessed to be able to have veterans running each of those different lanes, who I truly trust to be among the best at executing on those different modalities and taking those different approaches. So I guess all I'll say is we can certainly be helpful at the Sylvia Braffa Mental Health Center. But, you know, first and foremost, I just want to be a resource to anybody without having the treatment center owner, CEO hat on. I'm always open to just human connection and talking to folks. And yeah, it's been really great to connect with you on this forum. I wish I could see you more often, but, you know, such is life, right? Things get big, but you know, you're one of those friends where, you know, you have some of those friends where you can touch base after not talking for a year, 2 years or whatever, and you just kind of pick up right where you left off. And I think it's cool that our journeys have, been very different in some ways, but also have converged in others. And, yeah, time and is just a funny thing. And so are old friendships that sort of stand the test of time. It's a really good case study in just how life sort of unfolds. And yeah, I'm really proud of you and excited to see all the great things that you're doing and excited to see what's in store.
Thanks so much, man. And let me just say that, yes, and the way that I've started to see friendship has changed as well, because I'm actually not that great at staying in touch with people, but you're doing the work. You know, that's kind of, for me, that is a clear distinction between who kind of, not to be on my high horse about it, like, oh, only people who are doing the kind of thing I'm doing can be my friend. But it's not that. It's just, it's kind of unfolded that way where, like, because your journey has gone the way it's gone, I feel we've been brought back together. And yes, and my hope is maybe, or my sense is maybe the ways we've connected now will allow us a little more time together. Who knows? Because pursuing our path, pursuing our truth, pursuing our stepping into our power, like, you know, I think that comes first. I think that comes, at least for me. Some people prioritize other things, family and relationship. Great. For me, it's like, I got something to do here. It's like, I got something to do here and I want to do it. And that's what makes me feel really good. But, you know, people who are like growing and it's exciting and I want to be in their lives and I want to be a part of that. So that's really beautiful. And the other thing I'll say is I like the way you framed it about the percentages, because like, you can't just throw what we are calling spirituality at someone, you know, if there are other things that need to be addressed. And like, what I sense is like, I came into this world as like a pretty spiritual dude. Like it was just kind of part of, I didn't know it. I just like had an openness to whatever that is, that there's like maybe something more. And at the time I was sort of suffering a lot. I was very depressed, but I just maybe had glimpses or was hoping that there would be more. So when it started to work for me, like I could take a big dose of that, but I also needed, I needed a lot of other stuff. I needed a lot of healing, physical healing my body. Like really, like I didn't realize how messed up it was and how traumatized it was. And that's, I've sort of come into my path. You know, when you're in pain, yeah, it's like, oh, maybe if you've reached a certain level of spirituality, I'm not the body anyway, so let it go, whatever. It wasn't the case for me. Like, I needed, you know, and the people that I work with, like, it's one thing to hold a spiritual perspective. It's another thing to be in pain every day. So, like, I needed that as a huge percentage. And there are percentages of what it takes to live in this human body, which is often quite uncomfortable. So I'll say that, and I'll say yes to our abiding friendship and our ability to continue to grow in parallel and to connect and to have exciting and really just like loving conversations, which is what I've always wanted with the people in my life. So thank you so much, Jamie, for doing this. And I'll look forward to talking to you soon.
All right. Right back at you, my man.
Thanks for listening. If you like the episode, please subscribe, leave a review, or head over to my Patreon page to become a member of the Be the Vessel community with exclusive monthly benefits and to connect with me directly. You may also find me on Instagram at DrDaniel_Atkins or through my website, drdanielatkins.com, where you can also subscribe to my newsletter to stay updated on all happenings. I'd love to hear from you. Until then, may you be the light, the frequency, and the vessel for your highest vision.